Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, best in new inventory and all with great warranties. The pre-owned inventory, vast, and with the Sunbury Motors Guarantee, which is so important, and a great service department that backs it all up. And when you're a 107-year-old dealership, you have earned the trust, and that's why they have more business than ever. So if you're looking to work for a great organization and work with other great technicians, hey, give them a call. Whether it's Quick Lane, Car Light Truck Service, Heavy Truck Service, Body, Frame and Alignment, Towing Departments, your experience, entry-level technician looking for that first job, maybe looking for a career change, they'd love to hear from you. Stop by in person, apply online at sunburymotors.com, or call Todd at 286-7746. Legendary moment, legendary calls.
High fly ball, deep left. There it goes, soaring into history. He's done it. He has done it. 62. Aaron Judge is the American League single-season home run leader. The AL King. Case closed.
Swung on.
There it goes. Deep left. It is high. It is far. It is gone. Number 62 to set the new American League record. Aaron Judge hits his 62nd. All the Yankees out of the dugout to greet him. Just think of it. Three Yankee right fielders. The Babe hitting 60 and 27. The Jolly Roger hitting 61 and 61. And now Aaron Judge hits his 62nd home run, the most home runs any American leaguer has hit in a single season. And the American League has been alive for 120 years. This is Judgment Day. Case closed.
Vuelve. Swing. Ahí va el batazo. Profundo por el izquierdo. A la pared el jardinero. Olvídala. Esa se va. Se va. Se fue. Ahí está. Al fin llegó. Échale sazón que tenemos un nuevo rey del jorrón. Aaron Judge, el juez culpable en la misma primera entrada. Voló la cerca por el jardín izquierdo. Aaron Judge deja atrás a Babe Ruth y ahora deja atrás a Roger Maris. El rey de los jorrones de los Yankees es Aaron Judge. Llegó el 62 y los Yankees están adelante 1-0. Aaron Judge, el récord es tuyo.
We don't have the French call. Well, guess what, Junior? He's going to the Giants, so you can just sit down. It's the last time you're standing the rest of the year. All three of them, Ricky Ricardo, John Sterling, Michael Kay, all rising to the occasion to call history, and to their credit, all of them giving historic calls. Outstanding work by all of them. We don't have the Texas Rangers call?
Let's stick with the Yankees.
Are you sure?
Yes.
So, since 2009, how many World Series have the Yankees been in?
That would be zero.
How many have the Texas Rangers been in?
That would be two.
Yes. Yeah. To me, like, one's more successful of late. All right, but that's another story. Because I'm... I know you think you're like the Cadillac of it right now, but, you know, you're more of a Ford Pinto. That's put a lot of money into it. Because I know you'd be like, the Rangers, they're a joke franchise. They've been in twice. You've been in none. They didn't win it, but they got there twice. And my friend Chuck Greenberg, by the way, was managing general partner when they did it. So I'll bet any amount the Rangers guys called it really well.
Oh, they did. I just saw the Bally Sports TV.
No. I'm not saying you should play it. That's not what I'm saying. I said, I'll bet as pros they called it really well. Because I talked to my class about this last week. I said, look, when you're the opposing announcer, quote unquote, I said, remember, I don't care who you're working for. You still have to do history the right way. You can't just like, it's 8-5. I mean, and I've heard that before. You can't do that. You've got to call history right. It's your one shot at calling it, too. Make it count. Now, when it goes back to the game and the scope of the game and the winning and the losing, yeah. But a slice of history, a betting amount, that the Rangers guys called it right. I've heard their broadcast before. They're very good.
Yeah, from the Bally Sports call, that was the only one I saw. It was good. I thought it was good.
Yeah, and it's the way it should be. What a great moment for baseball, a great moment for the Yankees, great moment for the American League, phenomenal moment for Aaron Judge, who's had the contract year of all contract years. He bet on himself. And look how it's turned out. Every time they put down a card, boom, he's put down another card, and he's got 21. Every time. What a year. He's not going to win the batting title, by the way. He will not win that. He will not win the Triple Crown. The kid for the Twins is playing today. He's leading off. Even if he goes 0-5, he still beats Judge by a point. Just so you know, Matt.
Right. Yeah, I kind of figured that was pretty much it after yesterday.
Yeah, because somebody asked me about it today, and I said, well, let's just look at his numbers. He's 172 of 546. So if he goes 0-4, he hits 313. If he goes 0-5, he hits 312. So Aaron Judge will not win the batting title. Interesting that Pete Alonso is tied with him for the major league lead in RBIs. They're both at 131. And, of course, Kyle Schwarber leads the National League in home runs with 46. He's 16 behind Judge. Wow. But it's just different times, different era. You know, you can go through each era and you can come up with the pluses and minuses of each era. Ruth did not play against an integrated league. But Ruth also played nothing but day games. He didn't play any night games. Ruth traveled by train. Nothing was west of St. Louis. Ruth played 154 games. He didn't play 162. He didn't have interleague play. The only interleague play he had was the four games he played in the World Series that year. Maris. Okay? Well, you do have coast-to-coast travel. Yeah, they did travel by plane. Okay, not jets, but planes. All right. 162-game schedule. That's a plus. The other plus was, while the league is integrated, more diluted because of the two expansion teams in Washington and Los Angeles with the Angels and the Senators. All right? You factor that in. But no interleague play. The only interleague play Maris was involved in was the five games in the World Series against the Reds. Judge, Okay. Judge better travel, better hotels, but he has to play sometimes on artificial surface, which Maris and Ruth never had to. Interleague play, which Maris and Ruth only had to handle in the World Series. Right? The DH, which gave Judge the occasional semi-day off. So there's a lot of different factors in each one that they had to deal with or not deal with in their respective eras. And I've already gone through the Bonds and McGuire thing about what was legal and what wasn't legal and what's suspected. And, you know, you can suspect all you want, but guess what? Technically, you were allowed to do it. Right? Now, are the ethics of it wrong? Is it something that if I'm there in their spot, would I do? No, that's not me. And I could tell you, I would never have done it. And Matt wouldn't have done it. Although I'm a little worried about you giving the creatine shakes to the kids. I'm a little, you know, you can't live your life vicariously through the kids, you know. You gotta, like, carve out your own life. But, you know, and we could talk about the morals of it and so forth. Yeah, I got that. Anybody who calls up and says to me, hey, Steve, you know, you're not wrong. You're not wrong. But I'm not wrong either. Because, technically, that's why Mark McGuire wasn't hiding the Andro. He was allowed to use it. Okay. And they weren't testing. That's why guys like Manny Ramirez and Alex Rodriguez were in a different category. They both failed tests. And that's why it's more of an issue for them. They failed. Bonds never took one, neither did McGuire. It's Major League Baseball's fault, along with the Players Association, because they're the ones that set the rules. All right. College football bye week. Michigan is at Indiana Saturday. The primetime game on CBS is going to be Texas A&M Alabama. The cachet on that's a little bit different. Also, Ohio State's playing Michigan State. As we know, after a 5-7 season in 19 at Colorado, Mel Tucker got out of there while the getting was good. Because you can't, but Colorado's a... Well, I don't know why Colorado's a tough job, but it is a tough job. It is a tough job. And he got out of there, and he got to Michigan State. And in 20, they're not doing well. They didn't do well in 20. And then, of course, we know last year they had a magical year, and he parlayed that into a $95 million contract. Well, right now, they're, what, 2-2 on the season? And they've got Ohio State this week, and Trevion Henderson is back. You're talking about the possibility. And remember, in the great year that Michigan State had last year, Ohio State blew them out last year. Blew them out. If they come out of there at 2-3, you're sitting there at Michigan. And you know what's interesting about Michigan State? You want to know how much money Michigan State paid him? All that $95 million is from boosters. You know that?
Uh-oh.
That's booster money. I mean, they're talking about the total contract. So I'm just saying that, you know, you see stuff like that, and I'm talking about the boosters' influence in what's going on. It's greater than ever. And what, remember, Brad Nessler and I were talking on the show. In the SEC, for example, he feels the boosters have more power where? Auburn.
Yep. Exactly what I thought of once you brought this up.
And I thought that was such an interesting answer because it was not an answer I expected. And remember, they gave Gus Malzahn $20 million to go away. Not to be confused with the GoFundMe page when it deals with the suit going away. It's a different... But I also felt compelled to promote it. No, I'm just kidding. But they gave him $20 million to leave. He took the $20 million, looked around and said, yeah, you know, I can go to Central Florida. I'm good. It hurts. But it does ease the pain a bit. And this is where I misjudged. I thought the pandemic, because everybody lost a minimum of 8 figures in the pandemic. Everybody lost 8 figures. Now, how deep the 8 figures happen to me, maybe somebody's 10 to 15 million in losses, others maybe 60 to 80 million in losses. And we've talked about UCLA, for example, over and over again, about them being $102.8 million, somewhere in that neighborhood, in debt. And $60 million of that is from the pandemic. And I thought the pandemic would reel in some of this stuff. I thought there would be sports that would be cut, all right, because of the pandemic. And I thought some spending would be reeled in, and I thought coaches would be a little bit safer because of the buyout numbers. I've been wrong on all three counts. Spending has not been reined in. No sports were cut. Stanford was on the verge of doing it, then they brought them all back. And in terms of coaches being safe, I remember when Danny Manning got let go at Wake Forest in the middle of all this. Like, okay, I know that under normal circumstances, that would not surprise me, right? Under normal circumstances. But I thought people would be a little more hesitant to spend the money if, because of the pandemic, it never happened that way. Right now, I mean, the money's being spent more freely than ever. One other point about Wisconsin. Let me get to that coaching deal for a moment. It goes back to a point I made a couple weeks ago. And Big Ten and SEC schools, because of the TV contracts, are going to be more attractive jobs to those in the Pac-12, the Big 12, and the ACC, Dabo Swinney aside, okay? And the reason is, that's where the money is. So when I throw out Dave Aranda's name at Baylor, going to the Big Ten should be a step up because of the finances of it. I'm just trying to, you know, point that out. But again, and how many times have I said on this show, and Matt knows this, if I'm talking about certain elements as I go through, and it turned out that I'm not right about it, I will revisit and tell you, you know what, I wasn't right about that. Because I think it's not fair to the audience to make you think, oh, I'm always right about everything. I'm not always right about everything. I thought with the pandemic, there'd be less spending, more coach security, and maybe fewer sports in athletic departments. And all three of those things did not happen. Did not happen. That way, when I am right about something, you know, there's some balance to it. How about that? Because I'm not afraid to say if I'm not right about something. Never have been. I mean, no offense, but you got to be pretty secure in yourself to do that. Right? Now, I am right when it comes to, like, Like, thank goodness Lisa's there to kind of keep those kids on the straight and narrow, because right now, I mean, it's a very narrow world. I mean, one kid has a Judge jersey and the other kid has a Hurts jersey. 5 years from now, Judge is going to be playing for the Giants and Hurts is going to be a free agent playing for Jacksonville.
Get the lingerie on the deck. Call the janitor.
I mean, what are you going to do then?
Cross that bridge when we get to it.
I mean, there's only so much money you have to keep buying jerseys. I'm telling you, they're both out. They're gone. Back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When car repairs get difficult.
Well, I just don't know.
Me neither.
We get good. Sunbury Motors. More than quality new and used cars, Sunbury Motors specializes in complicated auto repair diagnosis. They can handle intricate repairs and even complete auto body with service open Monday through Friday, 7 till 4. And Sunbury Motors has made simple repairs easy. Maintaining your vehicle is necessary. Finding the time to do it is difficult. Welcome to Sunbury Motors Quick Lane. Open 7 till 4, Monday through Friday. Just walk in or call ahead. Relax in their remodeled waiting room with Wi-Fi, beverages, and snacks. Will Sunbury Motors factory trained techs take care of your oil change, tire alignments, brakes, and inspections. Quick Lane, 6:30 to 6, Monday through Friday, Saturday, 6:30 till 2. Sunbury Motors, Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We take the out of auto repair.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show is brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Care Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. By the way, John asked a very good question. What about the baseballs? Baseball had been in a dead ball era. I'm going to get to Neil Kulong here in a moment. Baseball had been in a dead ball era. Then when Ruth got, you know, like, he hit 29 home runs with the Red Sox in 19. Then when he got to the Yankees, they got out of the dead ball era, and, you know, he hit home runs. But in 27, Ruth and Gehrig were really the only guys hitting bundles of them. 61, Maris and Mantle were really the only ones hitting bundles of them. And this year, Judge is really the only one. Yeah, I mean, a really good year for Kyle Schwarber at 46. But I don't think anybody else in the American League had more than 40. So it's exceptional. Now, when Bonds, Sosa, McGuire were going through their run, guess what? I mean, a lot of people were hitting a lot of home runs. So, yeah, the baseball does factor into it. It's a very good point by John. But Judge, he really has been the only guy. Just like Maris and Mantle were really the only guys in 61, and really the only two guys in 27 were Ruth and Gehrig. So it just shows you how exceptional all of them happened to be. All right. But again, in that McGuire, Bonds, Sosa deal, a lot of people were hitting home runs. All right, let's talk about the Steelers for a moment. Matt, of course, doing the victory dance every single day until they get to the playoffs, and then all of a sudden, like, everything gets tight, and they have to play winning teams, and they lose. No, that's not how you look at it, Matt.
No, senor! No, senor! No, senor!
You do to your schedule's awful, right?
Yes, I'm aware.
Yeah, like, holy mackerel. I mean, who are you playing this week? Danville?
At Arizona this week.
Wow. Murderer's Row continues. meanwhile, the Steelers, you see what the Steelers got?
Oh,
play?
I know.
They got to go to Buffalo. They got Miami. They got Tampa Bay. Then they got the Eagles.
That's right.
Hey, yeah. What a four-game swing that is.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Not great.
So let's bring in Neil Kulong, our first-round draft pick. Neil, great to have you with us.
Thank you for having me, as always. I'm sure you guys can see the white smoke coming out of the pillars around Akron Stadium right now. Everyone's fired up, and we're not exactly sure why yet.
They do know they're playing Buffalo, right?
I don't know. For the sake of optimism, I think that a lot of fans that I've talked to seem to think they're on Buffalo's level, and they're not. Let's put it this way: they pulled off one of the weirder wins you'll ever see last year.
Yes.
A real, you know, yeah. I hate to use this word loosely, but a fluke win in Buffalo last year. Buffalo's twice as good as they were last year, and I'm sure they're not real happy about that loss. So
yeah, Killebrew had a big day, if I remember the opener.
Yep.
Or something. Yeah, he did. So
yeah, I mean, when Miles Killebrew is one of the stars of the game, something went wrong. You know, that's not a normal game.
No. It was only a half of football, but what was your 30-minute evaluation of Kenny Pickett?
A 30-minute evaluation is I've never felt this optimistic about a quarterback who threw three interceptions and a half. I've said this about Pickett since they drafted him, and that was really more putting him into Pittsburgh, evaluating him from that lens, not the pre-draft process.
Right.
My thought on Pickett was confirmed after this game. The sum of his whole is greater than the sum of his parts. He does not have a great arm, and we saw that. That's going to be, I don't want to say limiting, but you know, the second interception that he threw, the one to Claypool, if that throw should have been made, which at the end I don't think that it should have done, if that throw should have been made, he's got to put that a bit deeper, and I don't know if he has the arm to really do that. That's not a death sentence, but that was, in my mind, the real flaw. He made a mental error and a physical error on the interception to Freiermuth at the sideline. No reason he should have thrown that to a competitive space on the field. It just wasn't a good idea. There was nothing good that was going to come from that. Overall, I thought he availed himself well. I thought he made two throws that were at least, at minimum, as good as any throw Trubisky's made up to this point. And I felt like, you know, you'd be blind not to see that they clearly were playing at a much more inspired level when he got in there. Now, is that fear? Are they snapping to attention? I don't know. But you saw play after play. You saw the line really getting aggressive in the run game. You saw Najee Harris crack off two of his best runs of the year. They were making plays behind him. And that's what happens when you've got a Jets defense up front. They played really well. That's a really well-coached unit. Robert Saleh's got a lot of things going with that group. They had a nasty-looking rush on the throw that the Pickett got clocked, that he completed to Freiermuth down to about the one. A great rush design from the Jets. The point that I made in watching the All-22 tape yesterday was, I promise you, Trubisky would have seen that exact same scenario, stepped to his heel, and flipped it to the outlet, who was Jaylen Warren, who was 5 yards behind the line of scrimmage, and who was spied intently by the linebacker. He would have lost 2 yards minimum on that play if he even completed the pass, which would have been the best outcome with Trubisky. Pickett stepped into it. He didn't even get to use his whole body in the throw because he got he got chin strapped by the rusher, and he threw a perfect ball right where it needed to be, in between two defenders. He can't really lead Freiermuth any more than he did, and he can't put it behind him any more than he did. He put it right where it needed to be. It's a great throw at a great time. Those are the kinds of plays that extend drives, that put points on the board, that keep you ahead of the opponent instead of behind late in the game, and give you the opportunity to be able to come back. Now, that didn't work out the way that Pittsburgh would want, because like I said, that mistake, not a good throw, not a good decision to farm up on the side, but they win the game without that, and that's because of Pickett. So overall, I'm happy with it. He's got some things he needs to improve, and I think we're going to say that certainly a couple more times before the end of the year. He's going up against a very disciplined defense, and I think this is going to be a rough game for a lot of people. But I like the decision. I like when they decided to do it. I don't think we need to stomp on Mitch Trubisky's grave.
No.
I'm not going to be I told you so guy, but what we saw was exactly who we thought Mitch Trubisky was going into this season. That's what they got out of him. If it's time, if they needed to buy 3 weeks, 3 weeks and one half of time to get Pickett ready, they've got that now, and now they can move on. But Trubisky clearly was not going to get the job done. He was given every opportunity. He was given every vote of confidence. And I don't – he didn't look great, but I don't even think that wasn't even his worst half of football with the Steelers.
Yeah.
So it was time to make a move, and I'm okay with it. I think they'll be ultimately better for it. And the way that they look with a nasty four-game stretch here, we're going to find out if they're drafting in the top seven or not. And to go along with that, they're going to need to know by the end of the year whether they have their long-term quarterback or not.
And remember, Trevor Lawrence, for example, on Sunday after a really good game with the Chargers, threw an interception on the sideline, a ball he should not have thrown. And Lawrence is a tremendously talented young quarterback, with the emphasis on the word young. Kenny Pickett is a guy that I have talked about on this show since the offseason of 17 into 18, because I said 100 times in the show, leading from the offseason of 17 into 18, I said, hey, look, Penn State still has to play Pitt in 18 and 19. Pitt's got a quarterback, right, and Kenny Pickett. Now in 18 against Penn State, he did nothing. I mean, he actually played a really lousy game. But in 19 here, even though Penn State won the game, Pickett was terrific. So I've been talking about this guy for almost 4 years, almost 5 years now, and you've seen him for 4 or 5 years there. But I want to ask you about the defense. Without Watt, how big a hole is it, and what's it create?
You know, what was it, 21 of the last 25 plays were run by the Jets?
Yes.
They scored 2 touchdowns and win the game. It was the Steelers' game to win. They absolutely won that game over the speed of the third quarter, and they lost it. I will put a chunk of that on Pickett because, again, bad decision, bad throw. But defensively, they needed one stop, and they just never got it. I mean, Arthur Mollett got destroyed for the bulk of the second half. The Jets, the way they looked in those last two drives, it felt like, offensively, they must have put up 500 yards. They must have been 11 of 12 on third down. They didn't. The Steelers' defense overall played well. They stopped a lot, but they got gashed at the end when it counted, and we're seeing that more and more. To me, we've talked about this often. With T.J. Watt, his stats are impressive, no doubt, but I've hung my hat on this game last year. You remember the Seattle game last year?
Yes.
Watt got a sack, I think, on third down, mm-hmm. The first drive of the game. Then he did nothing until overtime. And in overtime, he had back-to-back sacks on right. That drive that forced the punt, and eventually the Steelers took the ball and won. When you have a player making those kinds of plays in big moments, they stand out off of the stat page. The Steelers are not getting anybody doing anything even half of that right now, and they're losing the big plays of the game on the defensive side, and that's killing them. You know, Minka Fitzpatrick stepped up, huge play, great interception, almost scored. Pickett was able to convert that into points. You thought the game was over at that point.
Yeah.
The interception comes after the defense is probably already gassed. You need them to step up and make a play, and it just didn't happen. So Watt's absence is looming large over a defense that is not playing without him to a proportionate level. If anything, it just kind of shows that T.J. Watt's the legitimate MVP of the entire league because the defense is flat mediocre without him.
Right.
And when he gets back, I'm sure we're going to notice that very quickly, and they need him back.
Which then brings up this point. Without him, one of the hallmarks of teams that really struggle is that on days when one unit's doing really well, another unit lets them down. And in the first few games, the offense let them down. Sunday, the defense let them down. How concerning is that they cannot put both units together at the same time?
A concern if your expectation for this team is a postseason berth. That wasn't my expectation. I'm not overly surprised by this. I said they're probably a 7-10 team, and they're one key injury, hint, hint, away from worse than that. That's where they are right now. They're playing like that. I'm not surprised because the defense, I don't think they're ready yet, and they're not getting a sustainable pass rush without Watt, and that's going to be a problem in today's pass-heavy league. Their secondary isn't good enough to cover that much for that long. And when Zach Wilson has two drives where he rips you up, converts like, what was it, 4 of 6 third down opportunities on the last two drives, you're not playing well. Offensively, like, you know, Pickett, Trubisky, you know, Jack Trudeau, whoever was going to be under center. I don't know where I pulled that from.
That's really good. That's a good one. I like that one.
He was a classic. Yes. But put him under center, I'm not sure the offense is any better or any worse. It's not a good offensive team. They're very young, and there are a lot of new pieces in there. You know, interesting, fun stat. I counted this, including injuries. Mike Tomlin has yanked his starting quarterback during a game 7 times in the last 53 games they've played.
Mm-hmm.
When you have Ben Roethlisberger, people get the sense that Tomlin doesn't ever have to make these decisions. Roethlisberger was one of those for obvious reasons. 2019, he couldn't go. They had to put Mason in.
Yeah.
Even with that, though, excluding Ben Roethlisberger, Tomlin's got a real quick hook. There are not a whole lot of coaches that are yanking quarterbacks that fast.
Yeah.
But the point for this year is, just like 2019, they're now turning over the keys to a guy making his first start for their team.
Yep.
It was a rookie then with a kind of veteran. It was a veteran first this year. Now it's a rookie. They're new players either way. They're new players. You're going to see good things, and you're going to see bad things. And they have the advantage early of teams not really having a sense of what they are aiming to do with Kenny Pickett. That advantage wears out fairly quickly, and the hope is you can get ahead enough to a lead and play defense the rest of the way and be able to hold on for a win. This isn't the set of opponents to do that with, but overall, the point on offense is they're all very new, and you hope that there was something that you could have done to differentiate a new team versus what you did last year. I don't think Buffalo is going to be very surprised by the film that they've put down to this point. It looks very similar to the team they played last year, just with probably a less intelligent quarterback. And offensively, they're gonna struggle to move the ball. I'm not saying that Pickett is good or bad. I'm saying just as an overall unit, they're not very good. It's high time people start to recognize that they really aren't all that good. No, they don't have the best receiving core in football. Their quarterback position is shaky. The line is coming along, but it's still they're still getting tripped up like we saw versus the Jets. They got destroyed schematically by New York. They're not getting enough from a lot of people. And all of that was still kind of a work in progress. You're mixing up the quarterback again. Another new player out there that might help you for a little bit, but it might hurt your own team even more. To me, that's kind of the position that they're in. They're going to need to find a way to schematically take advantage of the elements of surprise that they have. And we'll see on Sunday how much value that has. But they're 14-point underdogs for a reason.
Mm-hmm. No, and that's, man, they do have some tape. Just like, and we'll get into this probably at a later time. But if you know, so you could think about this for a moment. Notice how the fourth down thing and the 2-point thing are not quite having the same success as they did, because now everybody has tape and they're now practicing your fourth down plays. It's amazing how that happens in today's game.
Yep.
You can ask the
Baltimore Ravens about that.
Yep.
I mean, that's a team that is now put down so much film in doing
exactly
what the numbers suggest that they should. I happen to agree with it. Those numbers, though, don't qualify for the plays that get busted up due to A-gap pressure, getting in the quarterback's face and distracting him enough to not see the wide-open receiver.
Yeah.
And then from there, you push him back. He's not able to run to the sideline and escape, and you've got a very high percentage play. Overall, John Harbaugh is correct in the decision to go for that, if you want to look at it from a statistical standpoint. And I agree with that. But at the same time, I've agreed with the last four times it's failed for John Harbaugh in the Ravens. So at what point here do you say that your execution is more of a problem than the global population that you're faced with? That's what the Steelers are going to end up doing. They're putting too much stuff down. They need to constantly evolve, but they didn't do the first stuff well enough to think that they have something else. And it's kind of late to just change everything up, too.
True. Neil, you're always the grand marshal of this parade. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, it's interesting about what Neil and I were talking about. Just so everybody I think I've tried to explain this different ways, but I'm all for, I mean, the analytics part, going forward on fourth down, 2 points, conversions, things like that. I'm fine with all that. But there was a line of demarcation for me. And the line is quite simple. Now when you get to a stage in the game where it's time, score, and how many possessions, now you need to make better decisions and can't just go by what analytics says. Now it becomes a game decision. How many possessions are left? Because analytics does not take into account how many possessions are left in a game. That's where you have to make a different decision than what the card says. It's not just time, okay, it's time, score, and how many possessions are remaining in the game and your thought process if you play it out. Now you've got to make a decision that's a little different than the card. That's where I go a little bit astray when it comes to how analytics are used. Hope that explains it better. All right. First time in weeks Matt's been in a good mood. Thought we'd take advantage of it.
It is a good day indeed.
You know what? Ice cream for the kids tonight. Huh? What do you think?
I'm down for that.
There you go. You're on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Ice cream for the kids tonight.
Yeah.
Aaron Judge. I mean, if you know, I mean this in all sincerity, it felt anticlimactic.
I do agree with that.
Because it took so long. I mean, it's not his fault. Hitting home runs are hard. If home runs were easy, Schwarber would have 70. Geez. Like, when he finally hit, it was like, oh, okay, good. It's about time.
Pretty much.
But I'm glad he did it. I'm happy for him. It's great for the game.